Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to a special program tonight. I'm calling Death on the Beach, A Mother's Fight for Justice. And for the next hour, we're going to be discussing what happened when a body was found on the beach in Navarre, Florida, that's in Santa Rosa County, at 6:36 a.m. on February 18th, 2007. It was the body of 21-year-old Joshua Whittier. And Josh's death was initially ruled as being caused by accidental drowning. Melody Grell, Josh's mother, accepted those findings, but a couple of weeks after her son's death, disturbing information began to come to light, causing Melody to have second thoughts about how and why Josh ended up dead on the beach. The more she learned, the more convinced she became that his death may not have been an accident at all. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with Melody, and she's going to tell us in her own words what she feels happened. And we'll also talk with David Craig, an investigative reporter with Reality News Network, who has been researching and reporting on the story. Let me just say up front that what we hope to do tonight is anybody who listens to this program who has information that might help Melody proceed in trying to get justice, someone who's been there, been maybe perhaps on the same circumstances or similar circumstances, has dealt with the bureaucracy and possible police cover-up, who has any suggestions how she can proceed, they'd sure like to hear from you. And if you happen to have direct information as to what happened to Josh that night, certainly we want to hear from you. Okay, first of all, let me introduce Melody. Melody, thank you for being on the program tonight and being willing to share your information with us. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Denny, for allowing me to spend some time with you.
Okay, and David, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and thank you for inviting me as well.
And thank you for coming on. What I'd like to do is I'm going to give out a phone number, but we don't want to take any calls initially. We want to give both Melody and David a chance to get some cards on the table and some facts out there, and at that point, we'll then take phone calls and anybody who wants to text message a question or comment to us. The phone number to call in is 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982, and if you're listening at my Blog Talk site, you can get a question to us through the chat room. That's the Dennis and Griffin chat room. Melody, would you start out, please, and give us a little background on exactly what happened here from your perspective and what you think happened?
Yes, sir. Last February in 2007, my son Joshua had been in Miami, Florida, putting together a modeling portfolio for Ford Models. He'd been down there for 3 weeks. He came back up here. He turned 21, got a fat paycheck because he had money owed to him from a previous week, plus the week he had worked. So he had almost $900 on him. It was Mardi Gras weekend. They went out to the beach, him and a couple of buddies, and they were hanging out all day with the parade and everything. Went to a bar, having a good time. We have a couple people that are probably my age that spent hours with Josh that evening and got to know him a little bit and kind of watched what happened. But I'll back up here. We were notified with a note on Josh's door. Somebody had called the police, found out later it was a pastor going to church and saw the body and called the police. They left a note on the door, and the next day, which was Sunday night, is when I found out what was going on and came into town. Met with the sheriff's department and started discussing how to handle this. And they had told me they thought Josh accidentally drowned, and I just thought, okay, you know, wow, that's not okay, but now we get to deal with this. And time went on, and I started talking to the medical examiner, and she started sharing with me different things to help me understand the autopsy and different terminology. And she told me that she thought there was foul play with Josh's death. And I said, really? She said, yeah, I think he was pushed or he fell, but I'm researching some more. About 2 weeks after Josh died, I got Josh's ID handed to me from the detective who had been on the case, very young, very inexperienced lady. And she said, usually we would keep this for evidence, but we figured you would want this. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is really weird. Okay. She said it was found in Sean Sipworth's truck. So I took it and immediately put it in an envelope. Didn't touch it or handle it. Carefully put it in there, and that's where it has stayed. We went to the beach the following day after we found out about Josh, where the body was found. We found a Corona beer bottle, which I still have wrapped up in my possession, didn't handle it at all, and a pack of cigarettes. And they were right where his body had been found, which to me is weird. If he had drowned, I don't think those things would be found right next to Josh. But the scenario of what we think happened, well, let me go back. We went into another room. My husband looked at pictures, and he couldn't tell if it was Josh. And I said I would look at him, and I could tell right away it was him. And we made some phone calls, and then we left. And then I just started calling young people that had been there and talking to them, trying to be a support to them and, you know, help them through all of this. And then I started talking to more kids. And about 2 weeks after Josh died, I got a phone call around midnight, and this young lady who was Josh's girlfriend, on again, off again, says, this kid's on her way to my house, and he was at a party recently and heard that these two kids were bragging about killing Josh. He said it was a drug deal gone bad, and they ended up killing him. I'm like, what? So this kid got to her house. Then he called me, and I discussed it with him, and we got in the morning, we got together and went to the police station, and he made some statements. Right after that, the other kid that was involved at the party, who is the one that immediately heard it with his own two ears, said he would make a statement. I couldn't get the detective to pick up her phone. She was ignoring my phone calls. And that night, at midnight when I had gotten the phone call, I was panicky, thinking, oh, my God, this is huge. You know, who do I call? I called another detective, and he didn't even return my phone call, ever. Didn't receive anybody trying to see what was going on. So we went and made statements to the police. As time went on, started meeting more people that started helping me with the case, and we just started seeing how fishy things were, and witnesses started coming forward. And what we think happened was they went outside. Supposedly, Sean and Thomas had come and met Josh. Josh had called and said, I'm too drunk. Can you come get me? Thomas didn't even know that Josh had called Sean. He was with three other kids at the bar. We have witnesses stating, and I have ID'd through David. I'll let David share some of that. Who these people were. They went out of the bar at 1:30. We believe they knew, well, we know they knew he had a lot of money in his pocket. And we think they were trying to rip him off, pushed him down, held him down too long, probably suffocated him, and then drug him to the water's edge to make it look like he drowned. I don't think the whole thing was premeditated. I think it ended up being an accident, and these kids panicked. And then they started just covering up. Come to find out, one of the kids is related to a cop, which is Sean Sipra. And so about 2 weeks after this had all started, things started getting shut down. It wasn't being handled like a regular homicide. And I've learned a lot along the way. This has been handled very incorrectly. I talked to the medical examiner. She said if we have more evidence, she would consider changing her ruling from accidental drowning. Well, in the beginning, she told me foul play. So I said, I'm frustrated with the investigation. So I went and spoke with a sergeant who'd just gotten a promotion. She said, maybe he can help you. I go in to talk to this man. He negates me on everything I bring up to him. And he tells me I misunderstood the medical examiner. She never said that to me. She thought there was foul play. Then I'm like, my antennas are really up. I'm like, I can't believe this. What is going on? So then she did say she would consider changing the ruling. And after that, she wouldn't budge. She has not budged. And we have a lot of evidence pointing to Josh being drugged to the water's edge. His shirt was over his head, the scrapes on his chin and his chest and his hands. Everything coincided with that's pretty much what happened. His wallet was found empty. A lot of young people in this area have even said, yeah, they heard that. That's what happened. Ricky and Davey were involved. Chris Patton, I think, watched the whole thing. He stated at one point to me, he's been in and out of a mental institute about a week after Josh died is when he went in the first time. And he told me he thinks Josh suffocated. Like, personally, I think Christopher watched the whole thing and he just doesn't know how to handle it. Anyway, Chris hasn't been doing very well since. My mind's getting kind of full. Maybe I can let David jump in for a time here.
let me ask a question before we move on
sure.
to David.
Sure.
So as it stands right now, the investigation is officially closed, or is it still open?
It is closed. What happened is I kept complaining on how it was being handled because I just didn't think it was being handled properly. People weren't returning phone calls. David started jumping in, and it was just going from bad to worse. Eventually, a state attorney's assistant, David Rimmer, was put on the case because I kept complaining. David Rimmer basically asked some people questions and closed the case. He didn't recheck evidence. He did not check DNA on the pamphlet. David explained that. Didn't check with main witnesses, didn't check anybody else's phone records. I'm the one that got Josh's phone records and gave them to the police. I mean, they just did not investigate properly at all. They dropped the ball. And Mr. Rimmer has basically stated, oh, all of these people are really unreliable witnesses. He's just made excuses and did a lot of nothing and shut the case.
There have been a couple of kids who allegedly confessed that they killed your son in a drug deal that went bad. The wallet was found empty, and you know he had approximately $900 on him that morning. Did anybody account for where this money is? Did the police give you any explanation of what they think happened to the $900?
No. The $250 went to a phone bill. We know he paid his phone bill that morning. And then Detective Sloan, who was the one that Young initially put on the case, said, his wallet was found down the beach empty. Didn't seem to matter to her. To me, it's a motive for murder. And multiple times in the police reports, these individuals state they noticed how much money Josh had in his wallet. It's like, wow, Josh had a lot of money in his wallet.
We had, even after the phone bill, you had $500 or $600 probably that was unaccounted
Correct.
For.
Okay. Correct.
Thanks, Melody. We'll get back to you in a minute.
Sure.
Can you share from your perspective as an investigative reporter, and perhaps tell us a little bit, I'm not familiar with Santa Rosa County. Can you give us a little background on the county?
Sure, I will. But let me just clarify a couple of Melody's comments just a little bit and then dive into it. And really, it's a matter of perception. It's not a disagreement or an argument. She just, it wasn't complete about one piece of info. And I just want to say in advance that, you know, I've been on this case for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. And a 20-hour miniseries wouldn't begin to scratch the surface. But the fellow Sean that she mentioned, Sean Sippert, who, by the way, currently is in jail in Missouri, and from talking to the chief deputy there recently, they really don't like him. But that's a bit of an aside. Anyway, earlier in the evening, and he's the brother that Melody referred to of a Santa Rosa sheriff's officer, earlier in the evening, he'd had a conversation, allegedly, with Josh, and had told Josh that he couldn't come out to the beach because he was with a child, and he couldn't leave his child in the home. But later that night, according to Sean, Josh had called him and asked him to come get him because he was drunk, and Sean, you know, happily left the child at that point and came to join Joshua. But in fact, phone records indicate that Sean called Joshua. So Sean Sippert, the brother of the Santa Rosa sheriff's officer, on the record, was telling a clear, outright lie in relation to phone records. And my belief is that he was probably bringing cocaine to the beach to Joshua. You'll recall Melody mentioned that Joshua's ID card was found in his vehicle, and it was given back to Melody as kind of a souvenir. It was never tested for cocaine, my understanding. I think they were probably doing cocaine in Sean's car, cutting up lines, using the ID card. That's why it was found there. One person's premeditated murder or one state's premeditated murder might be another state's manslaughter. But in Florida, all it takes to premeditate a murder is a millisecond or really no specific time period in which one decides that they're going to kill someone. And I think certainly the distance that Joshua was dragged to the shoreline prior to his being drowned, my belief is they weren't taking him to the shoreline to wash him up or to go swimming. I think they dragged him there to drown him. I believe they did drown him, who the perpetrator said I'll refer to in a little bit. And that, under Florida law, is absolutely premeditated murder. So I believe this was a premeditated murder. And I just want to clarify one other thing. Amelia mentioned I started jumping in, and she was unhappy with the way the police were investigating it. Well, let me just clarify a little bit. She contacted me actually after the case was officially closed, which was 3 months after the death. Now, the case was ruled an accidental drowning unless more information should surface to indicate otherwise. That was the ruling of Dr. Andrea Minyard, medical examiner. And yet, with that caveat, they closed the case in 3 months. And this is with people circling saying, hey, people admitted to me they murdered this guy, who were never re-questioned. And the police gave away the evidence. So should more information surface, you know, they've done a whole lot to screw up any possible case because, you know, they've given away custody of the evidence. Now, Santa Rosa is usually kind of a quiet rural county. Navarre and Navarre Beach has kind of a pirate history. And, you know, their criminal activities take place really all over this country. But Northwest Florida is noted as a bit of a hotbed of disturbing stories. This is where we had a couple of abortion doctors murdered. We hold the record in the United States for murdering abortion doctors. You might recall Alex and Derek King murdered their daddy. That made national news. There was just a kidnapping recently of a niece by an uncle. She was recovered in Texas. That was on the national news. And Joshua Whittier was murdered on Navarre Beach in the early morning hours of February 18, 2007. And that, in my opinion, was covered up by the police rather handily and from the start.
Now, I believe, if I'm correct, that some of the questions, in addition to what you and Melody have already covered, evidence-wise, there was some blood found on Josh's blue jeans that apparently
wasn't... wasn't noted or tested by the medical examiner or the police. And when I brought that up to the police, whom I spoke with, and I did speak with the state attorney, David Rimmer, that you referred to prior to airing my first report, no one was aware of the blood. And when I brought it up to the police, and it was probably the same Sergeant Panshaw to whom she referred, I believe, earlier. Was it Sergeant Panshaw you were referring to, Melody?
Yes, yes.
And Detective Sloan, the response I got was, what blood? And he gave me a kind of a Van Adder look. You know, I was having O.J. flashbacks, like, you know, I put the blood on the pants. They weren't even aware of it. And these are fairly substantial blood stains on his pants. Now, David Rimmer later got involved in this case, and I'll get back a little closer to the timeline of the murder in a second. But it was a very unusual move. David Rimmer is an assistant state attorney. He was involved in that Alex and Derek murder case, by the way. But in any case, and he handles a lot of high-profile cases, but it's unprecedented in this region for a state attorney to review a closed case. So I wasn't really sure why he got involved. I asked him, and this was months down the line, long after the case had been closed. And he told me specifically it was to determine if the case was handled right. Yet the report, and I have his report, it's lengthy, somewhat convoluted, has a lot of distorted and incorrect conclusions. But essentially, it really didn't comment much on the quality of the investigation or the procedures involved. It just was a part of discounting witness statements or running down rabbit trails, which really weren't the most likely routes that would lead to the glaring truth of what happened in this case. Now, you mentioned the evidence, and it wasn't just blood. Melody contacted me. I'm an investigative reporter, I believe, as you mentioned earlier, and I'm, as far as I know, the only investigative reporter in Northwest Florida. This is the Deep South. People die here for unusual reasons. Most reporters have enough sense not to do the kind of reporting I do. Not really sure why I get involved in these things. But nonetheless, Melody contacted me, and I get so many calls from distraught families, and I decided I would take the approach that, you know, of course she's upset, her child is dead, but I'll investigate this, trying to determine and establish that the state's perspective was correct, that this was an accidental drowning, and I'll tell her I'm sorry, I made my best effort. And, you know, so I came into it kind of tainted and trying to prove the state's case. But right from the very beginning, you know, I realized that this was a murder, and everything just kept pointing to it. The police completely blew their investigation from the start. First of all, you were a former police officer, I believe, sir. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, well, you're aware, and maybe the audience isn't, but correct me if I'm wrong, but we're trained in police academy, and every death is to be investigated as a homicide. You know, you go to a home, and there's a grieving family, and an old person who died of of a heart condition they'd had for years. The doctor's at the door, and they tell you, you know, he passed away from natural circumstances. You find a reason to go in the room, strip him naked, roll him over, and start looking for telltale needle marks and holes, because if you don't investigate every death as a homicide, you're going to miss a lot of murders. Well, from the start, they investigated this as a natural death or, you know, an accidental drowning. That was a big mistake. They gave away the evidence 3 months after the investigation started, and that was after, if they had compared, which I did, the phone records to the statements made, they would find that at least everyone they questioned was lying about something, which I found a little mysterious, since they were trying to ask people about the circumstances involved in an accidental drowning. So why lie? Okay, but everybody was lying. Then they gave away the evidence, even though all this mysterious information had come out and convoluted confessions, etc. So I got it in my possession. The first thing I did was take the telephone, which had been in Joshua's pocket, according to the report, charged it up, and it worked fine. Now, the state's theory was that Joshua was rolling around in salt water for hours. The phone would have been dead. I double-checked it with T-Mobile technicians. It was a T-Mobile phone. They told me it would have been stone dead. So there was kind of a problem with that, not a grain of sand in it either. I had the blood tested on his pants, and it came from outside his pants. One doesn't bleed when one drowns, but if one does bleed, one doesn't end up with set blood stains on one's clothing, because they would be washed away by the water. There was testing that I had done by experts to show that as well. So the state's theory is that he may have gotten some abrasions from being dragged along the bottom against the rocks or shells. Well, again, there would have been no stains, but if there were, they would have been primarily on the inside of his pants, and when one turns out the inside of his pant legs, there's no blood there. So, you know, how does one explain that he has all this blood on the outside of his pants? Whose blood is it? That was problematic. His clothing was indicative of his being dragged by his feet to the shoreline. Joshua was a big, strong boy. He'd just come from doing construction work for a few weeks, and there's a clear line on the beach pointing directly at where his body was found. It's quite visible in the crime scene photos. It's obviously a drag line, and it seems apparent that he didn't get away because it's a clear, unbroken, and relatively straight line. So one might think, well, he might have been unconscious, and, you know, maybe that was, well, it certainly doesn't create an innocent scenario there. But when one looks at his hands, and again, the state was trying to explain his injuries as being due to action against the bottom and being rolling around in the water. He has absolutely symmetrical injuries on both hands. All of the skin opposite his nails on both hands, thumb and all his fingers, are gone. The meaty part of the hand opposite the back of the thumb, the skin is gone. And again, identical injuries. And you're aware, as a police officer, nature doesn't do identical. It does random. This kid was dragged to his death while conscious. And I come up with a scenario due to the extent of the injuries to his hand. He was obviously clawing for his life in the sand while he was being dragged to his death. I believe a conflict took place on the beach. He bled for a little bit. Then he was reengaged, dragged to the shoreline, and drowned. And from then, not much happened. Police closed the case. I came up with a scenario that very possibly a Ricky Clark and a Davy Singstock, two stepbrothers, may have been involved in his death. This Chris Patton that was referred to earlier, who has experienced these mental problems immediately after the death, that he may have had some involvement or been there. We know that Chris was there earlier in the evening. Now, Ricky and Davey swore they went home in the afternoon and stayed home. And or at least Ricky said that. I don't believe Davey ever admitted to even being there. But after I aired the first show, a couple of curious things happened. For one thing, Davey Singstock, a person that I pretty much came out and declared as a primary suspect in the premeditated murder of Joshua Whittier, phoned me immediately right after the show. Now, you know, if I had watched the show and I were Davey, I would think, this guy just accused me of murder, and a murder of a person who was, you know, my friend or in life. If I hadn't murdered him, I think I would have been mad were I Davey. That's the natural reaction. You call up the reporter and you say, you SOB, I didn't kill my friend. How dare you accuse me of this? He drowned, or if something happened to him, I had nothing to do with it. He called me very matter-of-fact, just kind of conversational. Hey, I just watched your show. This is Davey Singstock. Just watched your show, and I just want to let you know that I didn't kill Joshua, but I know he was murdered. This was not the right emotional reaction if he were innocent. Okay, a normal person would have been kind of hostile. Now, the police never showed photo lineups to anybody at any time prior to the case being closed. They refused the calls of four eyewitnesses who were calling, leaving messages, asking to see photos in some cases, saying they saw suspicious people. They were never called back. Bartenders weren't shown photos. Witnesses weren't shown photos. Right after the first show, a Michelle Powell contacted me, a photographer, a professional photographer who was there that evening and had met Joshua. And she told me that she'd seen people with him. She described them to me. I was able, through kind of a convoluted process, to find some photos on the internet through MySpace, et cetera, and identify to a great likelihood certain people, at least Ricky and Davey and Chris Patton. I couldn't show her a standard mugshot, six photos, similar people, pick one out, you know, type lineup, because the photos I found were group photos or casual, or, you know, it just wasn't going to work. And this is a closed case. Nobody's ever seen a picture. So I showed her the photos I had of, in this case, it was a group, Ricky, Davey, Joshua, the deceased, and Chris Patton. And she identified Chris, Ricky, and Davey as all having been there with him, and Chris, Ricky, and Davey as going out to the beach with him at 1:30 in the morning. No timeline was ever established. No estimate was ever made of his time of death. Yet by his body was found at 6:30 a.m. The first crime scene photos were approximately 8:30. The water was almost upon him. I checked the tide charts. I didn't have to be Sherlock Holmes to do this, but darn it, the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Department could have at least wondered, you know, how the water got back there or when he might have died. So again, the water had gone out, and then it was coming back in, and it had almost come back onto his body when the first photos were taken shortly after 8. All I was presuming in my suggested timeline is that he was dragged to the waterline and drowned. No need to drag him way out in the water. You can drown in a glass of water. And keep in mind, the phone was alive, so it couldn't have been submerged for long, if at all. So with that scenario, that put time of death at about 2 or 2:30. I had eyeball witnesses putting him out on the beach with these two dirtbags who swore to the police they were home or not there at that time. And then I have newspaper people delivering newspaper the next morning who identified one of them as leaving the beach at about 4 a.m. Again, one of the individuals who swore to the police they weren't there, but who were going out on the beach just prior to his death. This kid was murdered. A 3-year-old would know that. The police know that. And this is a cover-up.
Can I step in here and
yeah, say go ahead,
something?
Melody. Go ahead.
Some of the things these young people are saying is Josh was out on the pier, which is the opposite direction of where his body was found. They're saying, oh, he was out peeing on the dock. That's their cover-up story. If that be true, again, as David stated, we checked the tides and the winds. Josh would have been in the complete opposite direction of where his body was found, had that been true. So that doesn't even fit. And again, all these people are lying. Nothing adds up. The water was receding when Josh was found, or when we believe he was put there, the water had just started to recede at that time.
For a little while at that point, but, you know, he was drowned at the waterline. The water kept receding. But we're dealing with a scenario where if you accept the eyeball witness statements that these friends of his were on the beach with him just prior to his demise, and if you accept the state's contention that he was so drunk, and he did have some cocaine in his system, that he simply accidentally drowned in the water. Well, then you've got really good friends leaving totally drunk Joshua on the beach and just saying, okay, we'll see you. Hopefully you won't drown. It is not how this one went down, okay? They murdered him, got all over his pants. And also, the same I also sought medical examiner expert second opinion on the amount of cocaine and alcohol in his system. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the opinion I got back was that, A, first of all, healthy people don't usually drown on the beach. But if people would drown with the amount of cocaine and alcohol that Joshua had in his system, that we would be picking up dozens of people on all of the beaches of Florida every single day.
Yeah, the stats of drownings in that low amount of water, it's usually not an accidental drowning.
Oh, yeah,
the stats
a real
are very high proving that.
Long distance
out,
it's like ankle deep.
Right. And so another problem I had was they never ID'd Josh's wallet. Josh's boss was called. I asked him to describe it to me. I was told later Rimmer called him and asked him to describe it, and then the police Sloan was supposed to bring it over to him to have him look at it. It never happened. Josh's sweater, he had a sweater on in the bar. Michelle saw him take it, she said, I don't understand why he took his sweater off, but his sweater was found on the steps at the bar a couple days later. She was over here. That's disappeared. In the crime scene photos, it shows in the photos he had a ski cap on. The ski cap is gone. What the heck is going on with this evidence here? I don't understand. The medical examiner also destroyed evidence. She destroyed nasal swabs they took.
Really questionable. Sean Siprit, the brother of the police officer, I kind of left him out of my theory. I could never find a picture of the guy. Certainly couldn't get any cooperation from the police. Well, now I have a mugshot photo from Missouri, and I'm going to be showing it to eyewitnesses in a proper lineup, because with a mugshot, I can create a nice six-shot, montage of similar-looking people and say, do you recognize anybody? And that should hold up to legal scrutiny. And keep in mind, no one saw any pictures of anybody at any time, even though you got people saying, this kid was murdered. Sean went to another person that morning at about 5-something in the morning prior to Joshua's body being discovered on the beach and reported, and told that witness, described to that witness the injuries on Joshua's body. That witness made statements to the police describing the injuries on Joshua's body. And, they comported with the injuries on Joshua's dead body. And yet, of course, Sean had left much earlier in the evening when Joshua was just fine and was allegedly going to wait around to meet a girl. There was no girl coming. The only girlfriend he had was a girlfriend named Brittany. He talked to her at 10:30 earlier in the evening. She had described his demeanor as belligerent, and she wasn't coming out to the beach. So I think we're going to find that Sean is going to be ID'd as being in the bar at that time, too. There may have been a whole crowd out there for the murder, but the two likeliest suspects are Ricky Clark and Davy Singstock. And certainly there are other suspicious people. The police didn't do any of the standard boilerplate stuff you'd expect them to do. And they've gone out of their way to make this go away. When the state attorney got involved, he just helped cover it up. You'll like this. And I realize I'm going on here, but Dr. Andrea Minyard, the medical examiner, has been involved in a lot of convoluted and questionable decisions here. But just in relation to Josh, again, she had the caveat, accidental unless more information surfaces to indicate otherwise. So I went back to the doctor. I said, doctor, well, here's an avalanche of information that has come out indicating otherwise. Eyewitnesses. People lying, records that weren't checked, but obviously everybody's lying, blood all over the clothes that, with all due respect, Dr. Minyard, neither you or the police spotted, have shown any interest in, or even want to test now. It just goes on and on. Well, would you consider changing your ruling? It was kind of like Animal Farm, four legs good, two legs bad, until, the pigs start walking. And then it becomes four legs good, two legs better. So her ruling then changed from, unless more information surfaces that indicates otherwise, to unless credible information surfaces. And, of course, she didn't consider photographic information, independent expert information, any of this stuff. She didn't consider phone records, you know, and she didn't consider this credible. So David Rimmer, most favorable light to the state in this presumption that I'm making now, in his long report with lots of inaccuracies, just backing up the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Department, trying to make this problem go away rather than encourage anybody to investigate this obvious murder. His conclusion was that it was equally likely that Joshua may have been murdered or not murdered. Well, one would think that that would comport more with a ruling of, you know, undecided, or, you know, rather than accidental. So the doctor won't come off the dime, and coincidentally, and it is actually, there are no coincidences in you know, crime investigations, and you know that as a former police officer, he didn't give a copy of his report to the medical examiner. So, you know, why would she be interested in his ruling that it was equally likely that he may have been murdered or not? He also criticized me, and I'm getting criticized all the time. I can take it. I'm a big boy. But he criticized me for showing photos of people to witnesses. Well, damn it, David Rimmer, okay? The case had been closed for months. The police refused to show photos of anybody at any time to witnesses that were begging to see lineups. These people should be in jail. And I'm not talking about the killers. I'm talking about the investigators for malfeasance. I'm talking about the state actors for totally absolving themselves of any responsibility for doing the right thing, for doing their job, for even upholding the most minimal standards of investigative requirements in this case. Everybody knows this was a murder.
I agree 100% in what you just said. And I've been reading mission statements on the internet and printing them out, and I cannot believe these guys are not even holding even anywhere close to what they're stating their mission statements are. The U.S. Attorney's Office, the Governor's Office, and then the State Attorney's Office.
Let me digress just for a second. I know you want to take calls if you have time at some point, but let me throw in just a little humor. Everybody needs a laugh every once in a while. In reference to a different case, you know, this is a sunshine state. Well, much like, you know, 1984, the Ministry of Truth is lies. Well, the sunshine state pretty much lives in darkness. I made an official request to the state attorney's, attorney general's office to find out if a certain state investigative agency was required to follow standard procedures of evidence gathering prior to their hearing, which in effect is a trial. And I realize this is a totally different subject. But the answer I got, and again, the question is simply, is the state required to obey rules of evidence gathering before they put somebody in jail in a trial? And, you know, one would think the answer would be yes. I just wanted it in writing. Well, I got the official reply. And the reply I got from the state of Florida was, you need to get a permit if you are going to own a snake in the state of Florida.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. That's encouraging.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of help you get from the state around here. Now, at least I know what to do if I want to own a snake.
Before we go further, let me, what I'd like to do, Melody, starting with you, I'd like you to give out any contact information you'd like, such as an email or a phone number, whatever you want. So if somebody does have information,
sure,
they could call you or get a hold of you and pass the information on. Then I'm going to ask the same thing of David. Melody, you go ahead, please.
Sure. It's Melody, and my email is melodygrell, G-R-E-L-L, at yahoo.com. My phone number is 850-758-5329. I want to add a couple things, if I may, real quick. I have contacted the Commission of Ethics Committee. They say I don't have any valid complaints, that these public servants are immune. I was told that the Sheriff's Department can be as negligent as they want. To file a complaint, you have to have a blatant act of corruption. Where the hell do you go when the public servants aren't doing their job? I have contacted the FBI, the FDLE, the governor, just about, you name it, I've contacted it. The state attorney, the attorney general, the medical commissioner's board, the Florida Ethics Committee, the inspector general, the ACLU, internal affairs. I cannot get help with this case. It's been incredible. Also, the bar was... Yes, sir.
From the sheriff, either have you. The sheriff of Santa Rosa County, where your son was murdered, won't return your call. Isn't that true?
No. I came back into town three and a half months ago, and I wanted to sit down professionally with the medical examiner and the sheriff at differing times. Both of them I called three separate times. They will not return my phone call. They won't even return a phone call.
They don't turn you down. They just don't call you.
They won't.
Right.
Yeah, they won't even accept anything. The bar is required. The bar leases this property from the county. This is not a state park. This is not owned by the people who have the bar here. They lease this property. They have been selling alcohol illegally for years here. They're required by law to have $300,000 worth of alcohol liability insurance. They failed to have that. They were over-serving. Thomas Brennan literally fell down in the doorway walking out of this bar. The two, Ricky and Davey, are minors. One of them was on house arrest. Nothing's been done about that, and they were being served alcohol. I mean, it's incredible. This bar should have been shut down the next day and investigated and fined, and nothing has been done. They're breaking a federal law, having a jet ski fuel tank right here where Josh's body was found for their jet skis. It's a federal law they're breaking, and the list goes on. It's just been incredible. So the reason I stated all the people I've contacted, because I have a lot of people saying, well, you need to try this, and I've tried it. And I've tried every news show available. I've called. I have sent emails. I've mailed the story out. I can't find an attorney. I need help. This is wrong. This is so wrong how these people have handled this case.
Well, hopefully tonight someone will have some valid advice that can get things off the dead center here and get you going.
Yes.
David, would you please give out your contact information?
Sure. RNN News is the investigative reporting arm of Reality News Network. The website is realitynews.net, and if you just click Joshua Whittier files, there are four in-depth reports on it, but there are many, many, many documents backing up all these things, and a lot of these documents are seen in those reports, but a good contact email would be realityus@aol.com. A great phone number is 850-505-4966. And by the way, you mentioned that, you know, they just won't call you back. And this is very common around here in Northwest Florida in general. If they don't want to move on something, they just simply won't investigate it. So that way they haven't screwed the investigation up. They just haven't done one. You know, how can you have anybody identify a photo if you don't show it to them? So just don't show them any photos. Then you don't have to worry about murderers being identified. I don't know why they're doing this. I think the junior most favorable light to Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office. I think that Detective Sloan, being a very young detective, got in over her head with this homicide case. I think assigning a very junior officer to a case involving so many people that had to be questioned. There were many people circling Joshua all day long. I think she just got over her head. I think she made some bad conclusions. Certainly she should have called people back who were calling her. I'm not trying to defend her actions, but once they had totally screwed the case up, which didn't take them very long, rather than reevaluate, you know, pull up their bootstraps and say, let's take another look and do this right, they closed the case, gave the evidence away, and won't do a thing about it. When I went on the radio show with Detective Panshaw, prior to the show, I met with him in the parking lot. He was chain smoking. He looked exceedingly nervous. And I said, look, Sarge, you're the police. I'm a reporter, okay? It's not going to look good if we go on this radio show and start arguing with each other, okay? Obviously, we have differences of opinion. We should be able to express them in a gentlemanly fashion. Now, I expressed my point of view nowhere near as emotionally or, you know, with so much vehemence or hostility as I have on this radio show, because at that time, I still had some hope the police might pull their act together. The detective spent the full hour of the show accusing me of only working the case for ratings and for some kind of perceived fame. And anyway, when he left, the station invited me to stay for another full hour and take calls because they were shocked by his behavior. The state has done nothing but try to shut this down. When I met with the detective and Detective Sloan and Sergeant Panshaw prior to airing the first show, really all Panshaw had to say besides what blood was, you don't want to air this show. Don't put this show on.
Recently, I just found out Detective Sloan was probably put on the force prematurely because of her dad being on the force. There's a lot of that kind of garbage.
No, that's
some other
sure.
thing.
And she had to have Florida standards to be a police officer, though it wouldn't shock me if she didn't. However, putting, and I'm only guessing, okay, I'm having my 55th birthday today, so a lot of people look like babies to me, but I'm guessing she's in her very early 20s. And I don't think that's a great age for a frontline homicide detective. I really don't. I don't think you got enough life experience.
All right. The medical examiner, can I make a statement about her really quick? She was fired from District 14 because of her incompetence. They just had a beating at a boot camp. This is Panama City area, and they removed the medical examiner. This Andrea Minyard was put back on that district temporarily when she was previously fired from it, and she's getting paid $50,000 a month. Is that weird or what?
That was one of the stories from Northwest Florida that I forgot to mention, but that was another national news story. The boot camp beating death of the 14-year-old that was ruled as sickle cell anemia by Dr. Seibert, the now deposed former medical examiner. Well, he was replaced by our glorious Dr. Andrea Minyard, who once saw a murder and accidental drowning. And I'm sorry to put it that clearly. This is a murder. She knows it. The police know it. The state attorney knows it. I know it. Most of the residents of Northwest Florida know it. And Ricky and Davey Singstock and Sean Siprit and Thomas Brennan and many of the other acquaintances of the deceased Joshua Whittier know it. So
let me grab a caller we have that's been patiently holding here since we started.
Sure.
Are you on the air, caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry about the delay. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
Melody, this is Cynthia in Texas.
Hi.
I'm so proud of you up there. I do have a comment, and I don't want to hurt you, Melody. I don't really want to hurt you. What you need to go back and check is the digestive processes of this man, of your son, and learn how long it takes from the stomach contents. I don't know what time your son ate, but it does take time from going to the stomach, to the small intestine, to the large intestine, and you know what the autopsy said, or maybe you don't, that there was a, he was raised to use the bathroom, which means there was an 8-hour span. From the time he ate until the time he died. That takes 8 hours for digestion process. That's going to give you a closer time of death. I'm thinking around 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's 3:18. My daughter met Josh a couple weeks ago. It was 3:18, and we had a storm blow in recently, too, and the storm calmed at 3:18. We've had a lot of things point 3:18 exactly. David Craig said between 3 and 3:30. I got it nailed down to the minute now. That's a God thing.
Great. That's great. And David Craig, I'm so proud of you for taking such a good stance on this. You've done above and beyond.
Well, it's just, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Oh.
Frankly, I just wish these killers could be off the street. And I wish
problem. I would love to get them off the street. Melody knows who I am. I have a son with the same problem. I'm not going to steal her limelight.
I don't question the cause of death. I'm sure he drowned. That manner of death is the big question here.
Exactly.
And all of these people not doing their job. That's where I'm furious.
I'm just livid. Good luck to you.
And by the way, I want to clarify something. I've been making a lot of anti-state attorney, anti-Santa Rosa County statements. I'm a former police officer. I admire police work. I'm very involved in a campaign to unseat our current sheriff here in Escambia County and an adjacent county in Florida. I may be involved in a big way in the administration, possibly, of should the sheriff I'm supporting get elected. But, you know, I have no problem with the police. I just don't like police who aren't going to do their work. And worse yet, I don't like police who are going to cover up for crimes. And,
dirty cop.
You know, certainly easy to be sympathetic to this mother whose son was murdered. And it's easy to get mad at these cops over this. So I got no problem with the cops. I'm very pro-police. I produce a show called Blue Lights. It is very similar to Cops on the Fox Network. It is the second reality show in the universe. It came on 3 months after Cops. It's been on 19 years. It is the most pro-police show in Florida, the most pro-police show in the United States besides Cops. I got no problem with Cops. I have problems with these specific cops and with this specific state attorney. And
well, David, I'm not from Florida. I'm from Texas. This is all new for me, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she didn't speak to here, but we just, you know, some of the cases around here are pretty desperate.
When it is finally figured out, and regardless if it is or not, Melody, and I'm sorry, God will have to take care of these people in the end.
Absolutely. Justice will be served.
Yes, exactly.
Nothing will bring Joshua back, but should my theory be correct, we have a murderer or murderers on the street, and
You have at least two.
They tend to be recidivists.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to have more dead people.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, good luck to y'all.
Thank you,
Cynthia, for calling.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Let me ask you this, Melody.
Yes.
So the current status of the case is, if I followed this right, you presented, you and David Craig have presented evidence to, attempted to present it to the Sheriff's Department and haven't had much response there. They haven't interviewed or re-interviewed people who have actually called them to request that they be interviewed. Evidence that was found, for example, the blood on your son's pants, the mystery cell phone that supposedly was immersed in salt water for quite some time, yet works fine. These things haven't been explained to you, and you're trying to get answers from the authorities to explain this evidence you've found and the questions you've had, and you're basically running into a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I can't get anybody to do their jobs and hold anybody responsible.
The
they
two best
pass the
things
buck.
Right now would be A, DNA testing on the blood, and the state should pay for that. They're the ones that dropped the ball and ignored big blood stains on the dead kid's pants. Give me a break. Get the pants back. You know, the blood's not going to, the DNA is not going to change just because they gave up custody of it. So find out whose blood it is. Is it a mixture of blood? Is it Joshua's blood? The other thing is, absolutely, and before anything else happens, all of these witnesses who have been asking to identify people that they saw at that beach that night with Joshua should see photo lineups.
Well, and the problem is with, like, the blood. The FDLE and the FBI are just as corrupt here, so I don't even trust them. Bottom line is they're going to have a chance to fix things. I'm meeting with the state attorney's assistant again on Friday, and I'm going to point blank tell him, here's your chance to fix things. I'm not going to ask for specific things. You already know what to do. I know what you need to do, but I'm not going to mention it to you. This is going to get either real ugly or you're going to start fixing things. And bottom line is you are going to be held responsible by God Almighty. And justice will be served. It's your choice now. The ball's in your court.
I know you're getting short on time, and I'm going to be at that meeting with Assistant State Attorney Greg Marcille in Pensacola on Friday at 9:30 a.m. But, you know, they basically just did, you know, they just have not done their job. And
no, we could do a grand jury, and they could screw the whole thing up. But bottom line is it's going to be their choice now. What do they want to do to fix it?
Too early for a grand jury because, you know, they haven't even done the investigation yet, okay?
Well, this is true.
And then I have to tell you that with the evidence that they have and with the testimony that would come out on the stand, if they did no more of an investigation, many people have gone to their death of the state after being convicted for murder just based upon what we know so far. And that's mm-hmm. without photo lineups, DNA. I mean, there's more than enough suspicion to cast on certain people
right.
or groups of people. So,
well, I think it's the conglomeration. It's the tourism. It's they're failing to do their jobs because they don't know how to properly. They haven't been trained. Plus, they're covering up for a cop. I think it's a lot of different reasons.
There's
it's not just one main reason.
A sheriff is a political office, and
mm-hmm.
You have a drowning on a beach. Oh well. You have a big business that makes a lot of money. Maybe they're a contributor to his campaign. I don't know. But you have a high-profile murder at Mardi Gras at a tourist spot at a major business. That's bad politics. And after
yeah.
the investigation gets screwed up, the only way you can pick it up again and move forward is to admit it's been screwed up to that point. I don't think
right.
they got the honies to admit that. And I think they absolutely have the temerity to cover it up on purpose. And they've done that. They have covered this up knowing it's a murder.
Yeah, well, they're the ones that are going to suffer the consequences. So.
Would you folks, after this meeting on Friday, contact me? I'd like to update the story
absolutely.
Here.
Yes.
Yeah,
I
see what the state has to say, you know, and what they intend
yes.
to do.
I do have Ford Models getting involved. She actually, the lady who handles the men's division, called Janet Reno today. She's called Roy Black, who was the O.J. Simpson attorney. I have people helping. We just need the doors to get open. I do need an attorney if anybody knows of one that might help. I've been told I have 3 cases, criminal, civil, and wrongful death.
A
yeah.
3-year-old would know this was a murder.
Yeah, I agree. Anybody who's read the story agrees.
I'm actually... let me just throw this out there and see if I'm on the wrong track. But although this took place in the United States and a body was found, I'm hearing a lot of similarities to the Natalie Holloway case in Aruba. I mean, it, as far as botched investigations.
Yeah.
Am I right there? Do you folks sense the same thing? I know there was
absolutely. Absolutely. I almost wonder if there's an international drug ring hooked into this thing. I don't know.
And certainly there's politics involved.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a bad combination. political involvement. So what we hope happens on Friday is that this, you are told that the case would be reopened. But I'm just wondering, the physical evidence, like the pants with the bloodstains and so forth, is that worthy of examination anymore? I'm just thinking for court purposes because apparently the chain of custody is questionable.
The chain of custody
now.
Has been broken. But, you know, we can't invent Joshua's DNA and just have to drop on those pants. And no reasonable person would believe that if one of these perpetrators' DNA, or alleged perpetrators, pardon me, DNA is found on his pants, that, you know, we somehow went and found these people and stole their blood, you know, while they were asleep and put it on the pants, you know. So I think the pants are still good. The blood is still good. You know, the other stuff, not so good. But the fact
oddly
that the
enough,
phone, you know,
one of
it's
the...
either dead and going to stay dead, or it's alive. I think the phone's good, too, because the phone works. And that's
yeah.
the point.
One of the bartenders here who's related to the owner of the bar has recently put on his license plates, J22DNA. Josh, J22. He would have been 22 this year. DNA. Kind of fishy to me.
A little odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're running out of time quickly. I'd like, before we get cut off here, Melody, beginning with you, would you please give your contact information again if anyone has any
yes.
Comments or tips or advice?
Melody Grell, M-E-L-O-D-Y, Grell is G-R-E-L-L, at yahoo.com. Phone is 850-758-5329. And I'd like to say thank you to all the people who've helped and are going out of their way to help this mama, because I'm tired. I'm really tired. Thank you, all of you, for stepping forward and going out of your way more than a lot of people have. I so thank you.
Thank you, and I wish you the best of luck with this, Melody. David, would you go ahead and give your information again, please? You still there, David? It appears we may have lost him. Okay, well, listen, Melody, are you still there? I apparently lost everybody. So if anybody can help at all, has any information, suggestions, comments, anything that might help Melody to receive some answers to all these questions, please contact her or David Craig and pass the information on. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll update after Friday how they make out with their meeting with the state's attorneys. Thank you and good night.